On a planet with 7 billion plus other people, it's not like we all get our own space to act just how we like. So courtesy and manners are always a good idea. They help lubricate the machinery of society and make life just a little bit brighter. Having said that, there's a perception that society, American society anyway, is becoming coarser over time. How to hold back the coarsening tide? Our guest has some ideas on how to be courteous and deal with people who are not, without becoming rude ourselves. Amy Alcon has written a book called Good Manners for Nice People, subtitle Who Sometimes Say the F Word. No, it's not spelled out on the cover either. Amy Alcon stays busy giving advice. Her newspaper column is called The Advice Goddess. Her weekly radio show, Advice Goddess Radio. She writes for Psychology Today and the Los Angeles Times and appears frequently on other broadcasting and cable outlets. And she's the author of a previous book, I See Rude People, One Woman's Battle to Beat Some Manners into Impolite Society. So we definitely sense a trend here. Amy Alcon, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
I want to start with actually something we talked about yesterday on the program. We talked about reclining airplane seats and how to handle that whole transaction. Any advice there specifically?
Yes. There are people who claim it helps their back problem to recline, but really, everyone has so little space. If you aren't one of the moneyed who can spend $5,000 on a ticket. So, as my boyfriend says, unless he turns around, and he's a big guy, unless he turns around and sees Kermit the Frog back there, he doesn't recline.
Really, not even bothering to ask. I mean, just don't do it.
Right. And then if you are one of those people who simply must recline, what's really nice to do is to split the difference, to recline a little, or to talk to the person behind you, to show them that at least you care, to say, I have a back problem, so they don't think, great, just another jerk who thinks only of him or herself.
So this is a job, what you do, that many people would like to have. How did you get into this line of work, giving advice?
Gave it out for free on a Soho street corner with two other women. We just did this to make people laugh. We set up a magazine rack as a table and a three folding chairs and a sign that said free advice from a panel of experts. And this is really because we didn't think anyone would give us a nickel like out of Lucy. And people it was New York, the sign said free. They lined up around the block, and I started reading psychology and then science and learning to vet science because I put all that behind my work because I don't feel I have a right to just give you my opinion absent any sort of proof that it means something.
I noticed the science backing that. So you go far and wide in search of stuff that helps explain why people are the way they are and how to deal with them.
Right, because we have a lot of misconceptions. We think that we know why people are rude and how to change things, and actually, that's why you hear pundits always blaming technology. And, you know, Apple doesn't cause your iPhone to leap out of your hands and fly around the supermarket and bark in other people's ears. You know, it's technology in the hands of humans, and we are a rude lot.
Well, and then on page 3 of the book, there's this great quote about how simple it actually is to treat other people well. So why don't we?
Well, actually, we have lost the constraints on our society that force people to behave well. Now, sometimes we're just not mindful, but actually this comes from anthropology research. I read this guy's work, Robin Dunbar, British anthropologist. He measured the human neocortex, and he figured out that we have a capacity for about 150 relationships. And what happens in that small society is that reputation matters. Now we live in a society of strangers, and when you're around people you don't know, if you're a jerk, you can do anything to them, and that's what's happening. Basically, in short, we're rude because we live in societies too big for our brains.
Interesting. So it's not like the rugged individual needs a space to be off by him or herself to be a rugged individual, but as long as they're walking through the rest of us anonymously, they really don't care.
Right. I mean, and there are, I write about introverts, too, because they really want to be left alone, and it's nice to do that, to sense whether someone wants to be left alone. But being left alone and aggressing on the rest of us because you can, those are two different things.
All right, and I did notice the science about that our brains are wired for societies of 150 people. So we're supposed to know each other is the way our brains are thinking of things anyway, and hence the large anonymity in today's world. But you also point to a surge in rudeness. So, I mean, we've been living into these greater than 150 people societies for a long time now. To what do you attribute a surge in rudeness?
Well, actually, we aren't different. Rudeness is the human condition. We all have the capacity for it. But actually, we didn't move so far apart from our families. It really happened within the past about 20 years, and technology enabled it. I'm old enough to remember when people would shout down, you know, shout upstairs, it's a long-distance phone call. You know, now many of us have phone systems where you can call Paris and it's 5 cents. You know, so all of these things made it easier to live far from your family. And so now we really are in these far, far more dispersed societies where we're in urban areas. We can go, many of us can go an entire day and see maybe one or no people we know. And this really, it makes our society cold and alienated. And I'm not against technology, but I think we just have to recognize this problem, the society's too big for our brains problem, and start treating strangers like neighbors, to really make an effort to do that because it is not natural to us.
When you were talking about the long distance phone call thing, I just sent this flashback to Pee Wee's Big Adventure when he says in the biker bar, I'm trying to use the phone.
Right, yeah. You know, it was such a special thing, and now the special thing is people not being on the phone.
Why it's considered rude to call people out of the blue and more when we resume this encore interview with Amy Alcon, who wrote Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say the F Word. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Amy Alcon is the self-described advice goddess. She writes columns on the web and has a weekly radio show, and her work appears in Psychology Today and the LA Times. She works on curbing rudeness in society. She joined us in September of 2014 to talk about her book, Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say the F Word. There are some calls from the original broadcast, but we can't take any new calls or emails today. Now I'm curious, you mentioned starting your advice business on a corner in Soho with two other friends. Who were they and what happened to them?
Well, one of them died and the other one left the advice business. Well, actually, she's in the marketing advice business. And they weren't in it for the long haul, but I seem to love telling people what to do. So apparently I always have, according to my sister. So I went into this professionally.
It's a natural niche for you.
Yes.
But now, okay, so you talked about the scientist who pointed out that the way our neocortex is set up, we're used to being in societies of 150 people. And as you point out, a lot of naturally forming societies are like 148.5 and things like that. But we really can't go back to a small village where we all know who the blacksmith is, for example. So what's the next logical step?
Well, we have to recognize this, first of all, not be rude ourselves. And for those of us who can, we need to punish the rude. And actually, we can use technology to do that. I call it web slapping. If somebody's egregiously rude, to put their behavior up on YouTube to shame them, I think that that's an important thing to do. But for not everybody can do that. And for those who can't, what we all can do is do these small, kind acts for strangers. And they are so incredibly powerful. If you do something that you would do for a friend, and I give an example in the book of a woman who was asked for directions to buy where this older lady in Boulder on a hot street could buy a Diet Coke. And then the woman's girlfriend said, I'm going to buy her one as they walked on. She came back with a Diet Coke. What is that, a dollar? You know, and the woman was just, she was so bowled over. She was screaming, oh, my God, because this means so much to us that a stranger cares about us. And you can walk around being Glinda the Good Fairy in your life, and you'll see that it actually also improves your mood, your sense of what it's like to be in the world. And then people actually pass this on. They really do pay it forward. There's research showing that, too.
Well, as you point out, you know, giving a smile often gets you a smile back.
Oh, absolutely. And just saying hello. Now, in Manhattan, should you say hello to every person on the street? No.
You would get a little tired, I notice, yes.
Yeah, you get a little tired. But in a small town, you know, or in a neighborhood, I live in Venice, and I say hello to people I pass. I smile. I'm friendly. You know, it's a really nice way to be. It makes it feel like a neighborhood instead of just part of some big urban area.
Well, you know, this was a particular interest to me because I do live in a small town, and there's a place where everybody walks this little country road right on the edge of the farmland. And you can usually tell who just moved to the area because you smile and say hello, and they don't say anything back.
Right. They think, oh, you're going to mug me, you in the jogging shorts, you know.
Right. So I mean, I guess what I've noticed is if you keep saying hello day after day, after a while, somebody will say hello back.
Right. There was actually, it can be sort of aggressive. I admit to being immature, and I try to do better. But I did this to a guy. I used to see him every day on the skate path. And I decided I would just wear him down by being friendly. And finally, one day, he did just say hello to me. I'd just say, hi, and wave. And he'd say nothing, which makes you feel terrible because you feel snubbed. It's a dignity violation, which is when somebody treats you as if you have no value. It's, hi, you're invisible. I'm not going to just say anything back to you. And we feel bad when that happens.
All right, we'll get to dignity violations in just a moment. Our guest is Amy Alcon. Her book is Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say the F Word. Here is Mike in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. For some reason, my phone just broke up a lot. I'm on my cell phone, so I apologize if it's breaking up. I just wanted to say, you sound like you kind of covered some of the issues that I wanted to just talk about. One is that generally people don't necessarily do things. I mean, you know, some of us do. But most people don't do things for the greater good. They do things because it's personally gratifying and benefiting.
Right.
And I think that the idea of being nice to people really is a personal benefit because it just generally makes you feel better when you, like you've been already talking about, how the comment back, the high back and the smile is such a gratifying thing to do. But I think that the other thing you've touched on is that, like you said, that someone that's from out of the area doesn't like to respond in that personal way to someone they don't know. And personally, I kind of suspect that comes from fear, like you were talking about, that you might mug them or whatever, or that you want to take advantage of them, or you don't feel sincere, or for whatever reason they feel threatened by that act, and so they're shocked. They don't want to do anything to cause them any cost.
Uh-huh.
And I think that that's one thing that when people realize that it is their choice based on fear to be rude, and that by being rude, they think they're being powerful and in control. And in reality, really, they're kind of spreading a bad vibe, if you want to put it that way.
All right.
Yeah.
Interesting concept. Thanks for that, Mike. I very much appreciate it. So rudeness as power, is that how some people interpret it, do you think, Amy?
Well, I think that people think that they're being more powerful that way, but actually the truth is you can be perceived as fearful that way, and the way to be perceived as more powerful would actually be to be friendly. And I live in a neighborhood, it's sort of hood adjacent, and when I am on the street and it's night and I'm passing someone who looks a little scary, I will smile and brightly say hello, the same way I would to somebody I'm seeing in broad daylight walking their tiny dog, because that says, I'm not afraid of you. I'm saying, hello, neighbor. I'm setting the tone. And if you're going to mug someone, maybe you want somebody who's not so confident in the way they walk around the neighborhood after dark.
So interesting. Instead of fear creating rudeness, fear creates actually great courtesy on your part. Or potential fear, uneasiness, let's say.
Yeah, it seems a better idea. And he brought up a very good point earlier in his call that we have to pre-plan to behave well. You know, it doesn't come naturally to us. We didn't evolve to understand dealing with strangers because we didn't have them around when our brains were forming all of our complex cognitive adaptations that rule our lives now. But people make a mistake. They think they'll chase happiness and they'll get it. And it's very temporary. People get a new set of boobs or a new car, and they think this will make me happy. And it does for a few weeks or a couple months. But we quickly adapt to that. And so the way to be happier, actually, there's real self-interest in being a nice person. It is in pursuing meaning. And you do that by extending yourself for others. It really, really is a greater happiness producer than self-interest.
Right.
And I'm not somebody who is against self-interest.
Right, of course. So you put the good stuff out there, but then when you are confronted by rude people, and in your particular case, I mean, do you pick your moments that challenge rudeness carefully, or is it pretty much indiscriminate with you?
I really have to do it. I mean, if someone looks frightening and dangerous, I'm not going to say something. I try to discriminate in that way. But where I try to be most discriminating is in my behavior, because I write my column and book, they're both science, but they're also funny, and it's very easy for me to toss off some biting remark. And this is the stupidest thing to do, because it just makes the person provoked. It makes them do whatever they were doing longer, faster, harder, louder. And so what I've learned to do is to present things to people in a matter-of-fact way. Instead of going out, and I'll give you an example of a problem here. I'm in Venice, California. It's a very tight urban neighborhood. We're all very close. Our houses are right up against the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. People will come in convertibles and boom that horrible boom, boom, boom bass right outside our houses. And, you know, it shakes the foundation. And so I want to go out and say something awful about how they were raised and what their mother must have been doing when she was teaching them manners. But instead, I go out and I say, hi, oh, excuse me, I live right there. And you probably don't know this, but we hear everything. We're so close to the sidewalk, we hear everything from people's cars. So I'm assuming that you are good-mannered. You just inadvertently didn't really notice this, and you will do the right thing. And so this is better than basically coming on to somebody as if you think, hey, you rude jerk. You know,
right.
It just makes them aggressive.
Amy Alcon's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the self-described advice goddess with a column in the newspapers and a radio show of her own. Her latest book is called Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say the F Word. So that's the nice approach for the person who's doing something you don't particularly like in your neighborhood. But then you also caught some guy urinating across the street. That was a slightly more direct approach, wasn't it?
Yeah, that makes me get on my broom. I just have to say. And now not everyone can do this. This is called costly punishment. It's a term from economics that means feeling a strong sense of justice and then going after injustice at cost to yourself no benefit, which sounds like stupidity. But it's actually considered a public good where you're helping the neighborhood, because my neighborhood smells like a giant men's bathroom when it rains.
Oh.
Because of these people who don't just use the very nice facilities in the bar. And so I actually posted a poster about this with this guy. I blocked out the naughty parts to show that, you know, this is not just a giant toilet. You know, it's also the neighborhood photo studio, because it's intended to deter other people from behaving this way.
All right, let's take some calls here. We have David and Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Amy Alcon. Her book is Good Manners for Nice People.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I really appreciate you delving into this topic. I find that just saying please and thanks is a lost art. And, you know, giving thanks is something we say, but it's also an attitude that kind of rubs off. So I wanted to talk about a couple random acts of kindness that my kids have taught me. They play this game called Sweet or Sour. And they'll sit in the window of a coffee shop or on a bench in a park, and they'll wave at random people and smile at them as they walk by. And you get all sorts of reactions. You know, some people kind of shyly smile. Some people look away and pretend like they didn't see them. Some people crack up and laugh. I mean, you see the full gamut of humanity playing sweet or sour. And the other thing I want to tell you is that motorcyclists, I don't know if you know this, they have this little random act they do where every time you see a motorcyclist, no matter if you know him or not, you wave with your left hand.
Yes, yeah, I remember that from my days on a motorcycle.
And I want to kind of put that out there for the Rogue Valley. Maybe us bicyclists can start doing that too. It'd be just a random act we could do where every time you see another biker, you give them a wave.
All right, sounds great. Thanks for that, David. Appreciate it. Did you know about the motorcycle wave, Amy?
I didn't. I'm going to do that. Now, motorcyclists, I find them, they're nice to me, and as are truckers, because I drive a pretend car. I drive a Honda Insight from 2004, and the worst people are the Porsche drivers. They race you, and I think, like, my car, it has all the pickup of a wheelchair. You know, like, hey, big guy. You know, but those are such nice acts. I love that his kids are thinking this way, and this is a great parent, because it sounds like he talks to his kids about these important issues, and at root of manners is empathy. And I don't care if your kid goes to Harvard or, you know, some other, like, the worst community college in the world. If they are a person and you teach them, if you teach them to think about other people and other people's feelings, at the root of manners is empathy, they will be good people. They will be good adults, credits to you, people we want in society.
Let's take another call. Here's Jamie in Medford. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange with Amy Alcon.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Good morning, Amy.
Hi.
Hello.
A comment maybe leading up to a question, a couple of comments, actually. First of all, let's see. I think, Amy, we should bring back the bow and the curtsy again. Curtsy is actually a form of the word courtesy, and it would be good for two reasons. One, it would show mutual respect, and it also get rid of those contagious diseases that people have, because we insist on shaking hands, and that was originally meant to show that you had no weapons that you were going to use on each other, and I think we're past that point right now. And let's see. My other comment is that one of my pet peeves is that when people are doing a business transaction, they insist on leaving their sunglasses on indoors and with the earbuds in their ears, and to me that's just rude and off-putting. So what do you think about that, Amy? And I'll take your responses off the air.
All right, Jamie, thanks for that. And Amy, in fact, there is a passage in the book where you confronted somebody about sunglasses and really lived to regret it.
Oh, that was horrible. Do you want me to tell that story?
Please.
Oh, this is so awful. I just want to say I'm very clear in the book. I do not have perfect manners, but I try to look at them and see what I've done wrong and not do it again. I was at a dinner party, and I'm from Michigan. I'm a normal person from a normal household, you know, middle class or sort of middle class. Anyway, the Hollywood thing gets me. All these people wearing sunglasses indoors. It's 9 o'clock, dinner party. This guy's down at the other end of the table in sunglasses. And, you know, I said, like, hey, you know, the sunglasses, what are you, blind? And he said, as a matter of fact, I am. I was so horrified, mortified, embarrassed. I wanted to just crawl under the table and disintegrate. And I don't remember quite how I got out of that one, but what I know now is that when you do something like that, your tendency is to ramble with an apology, which prolongs it for them and for you. And so you need to apologize quickly and get out of it. And then someone will move the discussion along.
Right.
And
but
you
just
can maybe talk to that person privately afterward if you feel you need to say more.
What do you think about Jamie's idea of bowing and curtsying and getting rid of handshakes?
Now, I do not like this because I appreciate where he's coming from, because he's coming from the right place. But I admit in the book that I have no idea, you know, how many millimeters from the plate your fork is supposed to be. And I actually think we need to get away from these ideas, basically the Downton Abbey style manners, because these are about keeping people out of the upper classes, keeping the dirty, unwashed rest of us out of the upper classes. And an example of this is when you can wear white. Wear white whenever it makes you look good. Coco Chanel did it. Tom Wolf did it. You know, what I care about is, while you're wearing white, are you nice to people? And he had a good impulse. It's let's recognize each other. And something I talk about that we all can do, we go up, we're in a hurry to the cashier at the drugstore, at the coffee shop, and put our order in. Say hello. Tell them they have a nice smile. Say something human to them so they aren't just a computer with realistic human features.
You know, it makes a difference when you're nice to people. A couple of years ago at a rental car place in New York City, of all places, I was talking up to the clerk, and he was complaining about how he had to come into work sick because some other guy wasn't available and everything. I said, I'm sorry to hear that. This really is a kind of a drag. When they showed up with the car, and of course we were a family of four at the time, it was a two-door. I said, wait a minute, you can't get a two-door car. And he said, well, that's you asked for midsize, this is what you got. So I went back to the counter, and the guy's like, oh. I'd been nice to him, though, and he remembered that. And he said, here you go. Handed me the keys to a four-door.
Yes. This happens so often, and it can't be the reason why you're doing things, because that'll show. We actually, there really is good research on this, that it shows that we can figure out whether your motivations are ugly or nice. But it really makes a difference. It just makes life so much nicer for all of us. And a big thing that we can do is to look at people with compassion. Say that you're getting bad service in a restaurant. You know, we instantly think the waitress or waiter has it in for us, but look at them. Are they serving five sections? Maybe they had somebody else's section. Maybe they broke up with their boyfriend. If you don't see them outside texting and smoking pot, you know, I mean, think of them with compassion. And now maybe you'll be wrong. Maybe they just are a jerk. But you'll feel better, and it'll actually make it a better interaction if you aren't just assuming the worst of them.
Tell us about the sticky note you once had posted that said, Golston, listen.
Oh, this is so important because I have many areas, like we all do, that I need to improve in. And one of them was to be a better conversationalist. I had some time in New York when I was really just, you know, I was sleeping actually on a door on two milk crates because I couldn't afford a bed and rent. Things were really bad. So I became this relentless self-promoter. This is talking all about you and nothing about them. And Mark Goldston wrote a great book, Just Listen, and he talks about how you need to really listen to people from the gut. And I remember to do that. And I went to parties and just said nothing about myself, asked people about themselves, and I had such a better time and connected with people.
Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say the F Word is the book. Amy Alcon, the author. She joined us on The Exchange in September of 2014. You'll hear the rest of the interview when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Amy Alcon goes by The Advice Goddess online and on her own radio show. She wrote a book about curbing rudeness called Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say the F Word. We took some calls the first time this aired, but can't take any new phone calls or emails today. You mentioned earlier rudeness as dignity violations. Can you explain that concept, Amy?
Sure. Dignity is treating somebody as if they have value. And when you are rude to someone, you're treating somebody as if they don't matter. If you sort of barrage through in the dry cleaner line and cut in front of them, that says, hi, I don't think you exist. You are as unimportant as a crumb, and I'm just going to elbow you out of the way. And people, we have a very strong sense of fairness and self-preservation and reputation protection, and this hits all those areas. So we get enraged when we feel that someone isn't respecting our value.
Well, you know, right along in here, too, though, when you talk about dignity violations, you talk about saying no to requests and makes us wonder why it's so hard for some of us.
Well, this tends to happen because of our self-esteem issues, that we don't feel we have a right to say no. We want to be liked. We're people pleasers. But what I tell those people, and I say this as someone who had a problem with this and fixed it, that being afraid to do something isn't reason to not do it. You have to figure out what your values are, and if they are to not be walked on by people, to have self-respect, then you behave as if you have self-respect. So although you may be afraid to say no to somebody, you think, am I being used by this person, or is this a reciprocal friendship or partnership? And then you say no to things that you don't want to do, shouldn't do, can't do, don't have time for, because that's better than the alternative, which is saying yes, hating yourself, screwing up the project because you didn't have enough time to do it.
But then you introduce the concept of honesty management, as you call it. So, I mean, there are situations where you are not direct, but so when and why not be direct?
Well, when it's hurtful, I'm sorry to talk over you, when it's hurtful to someone else's feelings, when you can get away with a lie that will preserve somebody else's feelings but not mess things up in other ways. Now, this doesn't mean that you're going to be always acting out of integrity, but there are just things to keep from people. For example, I am an atheist. My boyfriend's late mother was this little, cute, adorable Catholic lady who went to church every Sunday, and I knew that if she knew I didn't believe in God, she'd think that my boyfriend would be alone because I'd be burning in hell for all eternity. So that was just something I didn't discuss, and if I had been asked in her presence, I would have demurred and just say, I'd rather not talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's an interesting point you bring up, too, is when, you know, when somebody is trying to drill into you for personal information, just say, time to change the subject.
Exactly. And you have to pre-plan for this because in the moment, all of these biochemicals, our fight or flight or freeze biochemicals come up and we're not prepared for it. So you have to prepare in advance. Here's what my answer will be when I am asked some question that I really shouldn't be asked, don't want to answer, that I will just say this, you know, oh, you know, time to change the subject, or I'd rather not say, you know, these are perfectly okay things to say.
About 10 minutes left with Amy Alcon. I've got a bunch of phone calls waiting. First up is Mary in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, yes. I want to take you off the speaker. I lived in an apartment complex, and I'm an older woman, and there was a lot of college kids. And I noticed I would, you know, have some brief comments for them. But now that I'm in I bought my own house and I'm in a prominent neighborhood, I find that I'm much more enthusiastic in going out to people and striking up conversations and getting to know people more. And there's something about the familiarity or about feeling like you're in a homogeneous group or permanency that kind of helps us to go out more to people.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Mary. And you're big on this. There's a whole chapter in here about neighbors. And the fact is you really do think it's a good idea to make friends with your neighbors, not just to be anonymous to each other.
Absolutely. And actually, she is right. Permanency helps. Because who wants to make a friend that they're going to when they're going to be gone in 6 months? Our society is very transient. People move around for jobs. But still, I do think it's nice for as long as somebody's there. And a thing that I really advocate is when somebody moves in near you, to bring them a little gift. Now, this doesn't have to be something big. It can be a little bag of cookies, or I brought my neighbor. I didn't really have anything in the house. I put a bow on a bottle of Pellegrino and wrote him a welcoming note. And this made us have such a nice relationship. You're hoping somebody's happy in the neighborhood. Here's my number. Call me if you have any problems or want to know anything. You know, that's all it really takes. And then doing little block parties, or if you're not that sort of person, just looking out for your neighbors. You know, bring their trash cans in if you know they're on vacation and can't do it themselves. Turn their, you know, replace their porch light bulb and leave them a little note saying you did it when they're away.
All kinds of nice things you can do, and they don't really take much of your time and effort at all.
No, they really don't, and it creates so much goodwill. And so then when that neighbor is contemplating booming the music at 2 a.m. or doing whatever annoying things that neighbors sometimes do, you know, they might think twice about that. Or it's a thing where you've primed the way where you can just send them a note and say, hey, you probably didn't realize this, but I hear that through my wall. And then they already have a base, a primer of liking you.
Right, because there have been some groundwork laid, seriously. I mean, just the basis established. Let's go to Roger and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Amy Alcon, the author of Good Manners for Nice People.
Hey, folks. Thanks for taking my call. I have found over the last, 15 years or so, that when I see someone, and it could be a stranger, it could be a friend, I say, hey, how are you? They say, fine. And don't ask me back how I'm doing. So I find that quite odd. Oftentimes I will say, hey, how are you? And they'll say, fine. And I will, and they don't say anything like, how are you? I'll say, well, I'm doing fine too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've noticed other people use that technique. It's like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
get the message in that they didn't ask it back. All right, let's ask about what's up there. Thanks for that, Roger. Appreciate it. Amy, experience this a lot?
You know, I would actually suggest that he say something other than how are you, because people don't know how to answer that on the fly. They are in the freeze mode. They think, well, do I tell him? He's a stranger. Do I tell him I just got my house foreclosed on, or do I lie and say I'm having a nice day? All this stuff is processing in their head. It's really too much to happen in the moment. And so it's basically asking, and I know he doesn't mean to do this, he means to be friendly, but putting a demand on somebody in the moment. You know, you can comment on something that they're wearing and they can say thank you. They're not saying how are you, because this is one of those conventions. It doesn't really mean we're going to sit down and have a chat. It's one of those speech conventions that we just toss out, not really always wanting to know the answer.
So something that doesn't require a response, like, hey, great hat.
Exactly, because then you're showing I'm friendly, I've noticed you, I want to say something nice to you, make you feel good. So that doesn't put any sort of obligation on them. They should, yes, say thank you, and probably will.
All right, let's take another call. Here's Jim in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Amy Alcon.
Hi, I'm real big on consideration, and Ashland has lots of crosswalks, and I'm happy to stop. I think it's a good idea. It always irritates me no end. It's a pet peeve of mine when the person using the crosswalk does not acknowledge with a nod, with a wave to say thank you. And it's just, and I don't know if I should be getting so upset about something so small or not.
Well, a little eye contact certainly helps, I notice, because it lets me know that the person sees me and knows they're not going to get hit by the car. But there are people who dash into crosswalks in some of the smaller towns, Amy, where they're not looking. They just expect you to stop.
This is a philosophical difference. Some people believe it is my right as a pedestrian. I have the primary right, and this is certainly what the law says, to cross, and so you're just doing what you must for them. And other people see it as an opportunity to connect with other people. I see that. I live my life now after thinking about this, very connected to other people, looking to help them, looking to say something nice to them. Sometimes I have to say something about their behavior. But so that's something where I think it's something where we shouldn't be so mad at people, because we have to understand, use that compassionate, look at them with compassion. What's going through their head? Are they just jerks? Or do they maybe just have a different idea of what a crosswalk is?
Right. And it is true. I mean, the people in the crosswalk on foot are the ones who have the right of way there. Let's go to Kate in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Amy Alcon.
Oh, thank you. Gosh, you've touched on a couple of things. I mainly called because I witnessed a thing at Christmas time that comes up to this point. A woman at a checking out at the grocery store, just absolutely having a meltdown. And the young woman next to me going, oh, look at that behavior. What's wrong with that woman? And I just said, you know, I think she's having a really hard holiday season. And the woman, she was probably, you know, 20s, turned around and she said, thank you for saying that. Gosh, sometimes I forget it's not all about me.
Huh.
Wow.
So I think it's good to be compassionate. And an old high school teacher of mine said years and years and years ago, be kind. It's the most important thing. Not so much be nice. Nice is kind of a rigorous kind of expectation of righteousness about being nice. Mm-hmm. But being kind, that's reaching out with the heart a little more.
All right.
Anyway, that's my comment.
Thanks for that, Kate. Appreciate it. It does imply a little more depth there, doesn't it, Amy?
Wow. Oh, my God. I love her for doing that. That's so important to do, to look at people behaving badly. You know, and you can really tell, I think, the people who are just egregiously rude when someone, you say, would you mind keeping it down on your cell phone in some restaurant, and the person just talks more loudly. You know, that's egregious rudeness. But sometimes you can tell somebody's just having a hard day. And I wanted to encourage people to do something what my radio co-host Jennifer Vertelin did the other day. She was sort of, you know, sharp with this guy who had parked in the wrong place. You know, they're moving some stuff outside her complex. And she realized that she had been rude to him, and she went back out and apologized to him. And I really admire people who do that. I try to do it myself. And you feel so much better than when you just decide, I'm right, they're wrong, they're terrible. You know, it changes everything. People will generally back down and forgive you when you do that. You apologize for your sharp words or whatever you did that was nasty.
Well, and in fact, there's a part of the book where you talk about fighting ugly with pity. And so what's the strategy there?
Well, this involves really what I'm talking about with the, you know, using this tactic when you are, this is an example of a guy in an elevator where a woman says something really just nasty and cutting to him. And even professional comedians don't have the comeback, the witty comeback at the ready in a cocktail party. And so what you can pre-plan to do is to say, wow, for you to say that to me, you must be having a really bad day to lash out that way, and I hope things get better. And that just really, it doesn't let them get away with it. You don't have to be very funny, and it just takes the air out of their nastiness.
And I'm curious about the statement in the book, the best way to bend people to your will is to avoid trying to bend people to your will.
Oh, this is so true. This is like the example of going out when people are being loud outside my house. If I just tell them, you quiet down right now. When you try to do that, tell people what to do, control them, they will just escalate. And so if you instead talk to them in this matter-of-fact way, oh, by the way, I just wanted to let you know, and I do this at a place where I write at this cafe sometimes, there people will smoke right outside the door, and it's just like the wind makes it like we're all sitting there in an ashtray. It's horrible. And so, you know, I don't go out there and say, hey, you can't smoke here. First of all, I'm not the commandant of Santa Monica where the cafe is, but all I do is I say, hey, you probably didn't know this, but because of the wind here, when people smoke right outside the door, the smoke just comes right in, and people are all apologetic. They say, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't realize that, and we're all like that. We're all not mindful. We're all sometimes jerks because we didn't think about what the consequences would be, and if you present it that way, like, oh, guess what, matter of fact, here's the facts, people will tend to be polite instead of rude in response.
There's a whole chapter in Good Manners for Nice People about the telephone, but now that we've gotten so far into texting, I mean, are some of the loud phone abuses ending?
No, not really. And actually, a big pet peeve of mine is those people who leave the sound on. You can hear every letter they type. You hear a clickety, clackety. It's so horrible. I want aliens to come down and vaporize them. It would just solve so much. But because, see, I don't always have nice impulses, but I realize that's not going to happen. But what's happened is that, especially for people under 40, the spontaneous phone call has become rude. So you can reach people by so many means that don't require them to deal with you right now when it's good for you. Now, there are people who are real estate salespeople or doctors or in certain professions where their phone call is expected and welcomed. So that's different. Or if your mother's calling you, maybe she gets to call you at any time. For most people, you should find out what their phone call preferences are. Do they like to be called? I do not. If my phone rings, if you're not having a heart attack and I'm on my deadline day, you know, I really am wondering why you're calling me. Because you've been alerted as one of my friends, I prefer email, and then I will go out with you to a bar or restaurant and stare right into your eyes. My phone will be somewhere else, and we will have a very connected time. But what I don't want is to be that person that you call when you're on the highway to waste a little time.